Today, we have Charles Vars, Professor Emeritus of Economics at OSU and former Corvallis Mayor, who has promised he's going to introduce himself a little bit more than that as he reviews Aftershock by Robert Reich.
Thank you, Connie. The interest that I personally have in business fluctuations really derives from a delayed birth. My mother and father postponed their wedding at least 1 year, if not longer, but I don't remember. But in any event, the Great Depression was a very interesting topic around our dining table throughout my youth. When I was looking around for a graduate school, I chose Berkeley not just because of student activism, but also because of R.A. Gordon, who was the author of the leading textbook in business fluctuations. And I took business fluctuations there and did well enough that OSU offered me a position where in the first year or two I was here, I taught business fluctuations. The difficulty was that Sea Grant was starting and there were opportunities to do research for EPA on coastal problems and so on. And so I got taken by interest into that area before I ever got in local politics. But I wanted you to know that this topic of today is clearly one close to my heart. I'm reviewing the book by Robert Reich, who is the former Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration. The book is totally different from almost everything else that has appeared in the last 3 years on the current crisis. The reason we use the word crisis is the near shutdown of the banking system. That really occupies almost every book that has had any popularity and been reviewed in the New York Times and other publications. For example, this interest in finance has led this book to be very, very popular. It's called This Time is Different. And that, of course, is precisely what bankers were telling the Federal Reserve System as well as Congress during the run-up to what ultimately was the crash in the housing market and then the current situation with a high unemployment rate compared to what we've had in the last 30 years occurred. But let's please understand that Reich has a special interest in public policy. After all, he was a secretary of a federal department. But in addition, he's talking about the present, meaning the years 2011 to 2020. I emphasize that period of time because that's where the title Aftershock comes from. It is what to do during the present period. He published the book in the fall, well, that's when the first reviews occurred, in the fall of 2010. And therefore, it was oriented toward his agenda for the economy, and that means congressional monetary action and so on. Okay. What I would do is that emphasize that it is a very good book, but limited, because it doesn't talk about the origin of the problems that unfolded in 2006, 7, and 8. Now, I am perfectly prepared to discuss 2006 to 8 from a different point of view, and I've given lectures to ALL, for example, on that. But today I'm staying close to the book. And I'm fairly, I think I'm fair to the book, and I want to encourage you to pick it up and read it. You really only need to read about the first 30, 40 pages to get a sense of where Reich is coming from, and then you can skip to about page 130 or 40 and work on his policy alternatives. And I'm not saying that that's totally what I really recommend, but knowing that you're busy people and reflective people, and economics is sometimes not as enjoyable to you as it is to me, I would suggest that that's a good abbreviated reading of the book. But what I would also do is encourage you to ask me questions. They've told me I need to stay close to this microphone to record, and therefore I can't be as mobile as I usually am. I have no infirmities in that regard that I know of. But I want to encourage you very much to read this, because I don't think there's another book on the market that is straightforward, supporting policy that should be, in my opinion, adopted at this point. Now, what you should understand is that I can say I'm in general agreement, and that is the fair way to look at it, but I would give a 70 to an 80 or a 95, never perfect to any of the policy recommendations as Reich does it, because I prefer more quantitative presentations and more theoretical underpinnings displayed. But remember, this book is for the popular audience. It's for the average person, and I think it is able to meet that standard. Let me tell you how I'm going to proceed. First of all, I'm going to have a bit of an introduction, and I'm going to take it through the level of the State of the Union message, because I think you need to understand what is going on at present as we interpret what Reich is recommending. Secondly, I will in that touch on Reich's major policy recommendations. They come right out of one paragraph. I don't like to read paragraphs, but I want you to get a sense of the type of writing and the policies that the author recommends, will ultimately recommend. Secondly, I'll go through his analysis, which demonstrates support for those policy recommendations, and then we'll talk a bit about those policy recommendations, and then finally I'll get to banks, finance, and other related interesting things. If I never get to that, it's okay, because, in fact, we are concentrating on what needs to be done now, and to take you through a detailed treatment of how the Basel Group of banks is functioning well or badly, and what they need to do next is very, very difficult, simply because the interdependency of the world, and I'm talking about the euro's problems and our problems, how that fits together and how we can really get banking systems in different nations to work together is a whole nother topic that I can't get to and really isn't discussed by Reich in any detail. I'm going to ask for questions, and it'll be the expression on your face as to whether I call on you. I'm going to do that only twice during the lecture, because I only want to handle one or two questions during it, but they may be such good questions that they really help me move it along. But I will, contrary to my usual lecturing style, not go up to 1 o'clock. I've got the clock in front of me, and I really will try to finish so that there's an opportunity for questions. Now, the State of the Union, from the point of view of most everybody, is the poor state of the economy, tremendous political as well as economic uncertainty, and some people think the economy has been mishandled. Whether they do or not isn't going to change the fact that we've got higher unemployment, 8.5% approximately, than we did when I was teaching, when it was 5% plus or minus 1 or 2. We are in a significant slump, no question about it. And there is no question but what the rules of the game, and I'll make reference to that a couple of times, have shifted very dramatically so that tax rates, tax contributions, spending by the government have all changed, but those changes have been less, I repeat, less than the changes in the distribution of income that Reich properly pays attention to in the book. Now, in fact, if you remember what Obama's goals were, and I made these notes on the day after his State of the Union speech, and they are to strengthen the U.S. economy, increasing employment, output, and growth, reducing the U.S. government deficit, and improving our international position. Well, now, most of those can be repeated year after year, except that in the economic realm, things are worse now than they have been on average. In terms of the choice of means that he emphasized in the speech, it was limiting the deductions and increasing the rewards for companies that bring previously outsourced jobs back to the U.S. Outsourced jobs means jobs in China rather than jobs in Detroit or Rochester, Michigan, or wherever. It was also the case that he made reference to unfair trade practices. He doesn't talk about our unfair trade practices, but he does talk about the unfair trade practices of China and other countries. But the substantive things that were of most interest to me as someone who did research for the Oregon Department of Transportation and other government agencies, he proposed to use one half of this war savings from the cutback in Iraq and Afghanistan to reduce the government deficit and to use the other half of war savings to fund the infrastructure. That means streets, highways, subways, light rails, et cetera, around the country. Now, we had other proposals, but those first ones that I just mentioned are really, I think, firm and generally supported. The next three are less well supported. Increasing the taxes on the wealthy. I don't know why he didn't say increase income taxes, because he doesn't have any idea of increasing a wealth tax. But, okay. Secondly, it was to finance home mortgages for individuals who have homes that are less in terms of the current market value than the size of their loans. So he was trying to hit one of those housing goals that FEMA and Freddie Mac had not. And then finally, he had a long list of domestic proposals to press forward what he thought would be middle-class interests. I'm going to talk a bit about that a little bit later in the hour, because there is no question but what middle-class means middle income, and the behavior of our distribution of income leads to considerable discussion, at least so far, about what our tax policies and other policies should be. As a former mayor, I was very excited though pessimistic, about his discussion of his willingness to work with anyone to strengthen the economy, reduce outsourcing, reduce bad debts, reduce phony financial sector profits, and also finally focus on the middle class. I don't think that is politically possible with the acceptance of Congress at the present time. Okay, I sketched that just simply so we would have a base for talking about what Reich provides. I will give Reich credit for his remarkably good judgment in accepting a position at University of California, Berkeley. Since I went there for my PhD, I'm very pleased he joined the business administration school there as a professor of public policy. A, he knows one whale of a lot about public policy. B, he was probably the best labor secretary that we have ever had. And thirdly, he has energy, which shows up in his books, his blog, and lots of activities. So I think he'll be a success as a professor at my favorite institution. let me tell you about the organization of the book. I really specialized in fluctuations about trends in growth and decline in the first 3 years of graduate school. I cannot tell you how good it was to do that, and yet I want to say that Reich has used a few tricks in coming up with his outline of the book, which are really very, very positive in conveying his arguments, but also as somebody who studied economics more than business administration, I really envy his choice. Let me begin by saying the first section of the book, approximately 100 pages, is devoted to what he calls the broken bargain. And the broken bargain is based on Mariner Eccles' insight, which is the heading of his first main chapter. Mariner Eccles is a forgotten person, but he was, in fact, a successful banker in California. Utah. Successful in the sense that he ultimately was the chief executive of a group of a bank holding company, so that he was really familiar with banking and its activities throughout the western part of the United States. Secondly, he was a very bright person and was recommended by Henry Morgenthau to FDR to serve in the government. And he went to Washington first to write a memo that went to FDR, which summarized what John Maynard Keynes, 2 years later, would publish the book General Theory of Employment, Interest, and Money, which is the foundation of the macroeconomic approach to the study of the economy. He, in fact, Mariner, recommended policies concerning running deficits, having government spending, et cetera, to try and stimulate the economy, as well as increasing the money supply to make it easier for the banking system to recover and to provide loans and help the economy grow. So Reich picks out the very key point in Mariner Eccles' analysis, and Mariner Eccles, who 2 years later was appointed the first chair of the Federal Reserve System, that's the same place that Greenspan was, Mariner Eccles was in that position, number one, And then he stayed through the Second World War till 1948. So he had a dozen or 13 years in that position. So he clearly was an effective person from FDR and Harry Truman's perspective. But he recommended monetary and fiscal policies that are very, very similar to those that John Maynard Keynes recommended 2 years later, and those were followed by Roosevelt. He wasn't following an English economist. He was following an American banker who happened to have a good understanding of how particularly the Western economy in the United States worked. In any event, Reich then proceeds to ask the question, what is going to be the situation in the next 10 years approximately, given the fix that we find ourselves in? And so the second part of his book is a discussion of what he calls the backlash. And the backlash of the financial crash was really one which is tied up with how the banking system and the financial system worked. But what Reich focuses on is the consequences of that crash that we experienced in 2007-08, what those consequences are going to be in the next 10 years. Backlash is a discussion of, believe it or not, a fictional episode where he assumes that the social costs and unrest that are current in our economy and in our society are sufficiently strong to lead to a change in our government where people who are more likely to be currently in the Occupy movement are successful running for office, and they take charge in 1918 and 20. In other words, part two, backlash, deals with the political and social implications of what has occurred in the period 2007 and 8. Now, what is interesting there is the use of verbiage to discuss it. I'm just going to quote one or two words from each of five consecutive chapter titles, because that'll give you an understanding of where Reich is coming from. Be content. He isn't saying the American people are content. He's saying that they would like to be content. Then he talks about pain, insult, injury, outrage, finally, anger. Now, the point is you've got four or five chapters here that are packed with what I would call the social costs of living in an unstable government. And I tend to skip over that stuff. I wouldn't if I were mayor and so on. I'm here to talk about economics. And economists worry about pain and worry about anger. Certainly, I remember people coming to the podium after or before a meeting, and they were plainly angry. But I never took it personally. Similarly, I'm trying to talk about economic policy and remove that social element as I go through the rest of the talk. Because in the rest of the talk, it's just the final two chapters in Reich's book, and I'll read you their titles. It's in part three. There are two chapter titles under the heading Bargain Restored, because what Mariner Eccles was concerned about, I'm going to show you a diagram in just a little bit, in fact, is driving the suggestion of policy analysis. Two chapters, what should be done, a new deal for the middle class, and how it could be done is the second title of the book, of the chapters in the book, final section. Now, I could go into the individual chapters, but you need to understand what Reich's principal recommendation is. Page 27. This is one which still holds in the final, and it ends up characterizing what Obama did in the first year that he was president, 2009. Now, I think that Reich should have put 2009 in the sentence I'm going to read you rather than 2008, but I would give the last 6 months of Bush, second Bush, some credit for doing some things to fix the economy at that point. But this is a summary of the thinking that underlies Reich's recommendations. When demand evaporates, government must act as a purchaser of last resort, temporarily filling much of the vacuum created by fast-retreating consumers. And it must make borrowing so cheap as to keep banks solvent and credit moderately available. Perfect discussion, perfect characterization in one sentence of what Obama did in his first year to as president. Bush started in that direction with his policies, but they were focused principally on banks because that was the problem at that point. The next sentence, between 2008 and 2010, the Obama administration and the Federal Reserve played their parts with, one, $700 billion in bank bailouts, two, a subsequent stimulus package of similar magnitude, $700 billion, and three, a massive expansion in the money supply. Those are very similar to the recommendations that Reich is ultimately going to make for this. Mariner Eccles felt, and this is, I'm not going to read the memo, but he understood the difference between potential output, potential gross national product, and actual gross national product. He understood it before the government was publishing such statistics. And he drew conclusions from it by saying mass production has to be accompanied by mass consumption. You don't produce if there is nothing that's being demanded by consumers. But once you recognize that, you can see the logic that Keynes used in talking about stimulating demand so people would have a reason for production, and that meant a reason to employ the unemployed. But here's the kicker. And I never knew this until I read the book, and you probably don't either. Mariner Eccles, a banker from Salt Lake City, was worried about the distribution of income and wealth in this country in 1934, 36, right through 48 when he gave up being chair of the Federal Reserve Board. And why was he concerned? He understood that however we produce in a market economy, ultimately good performance involves consumption right in line with production. Or rather, best put, production right in line with consumption. But it so happens that that production is going to lead to payments of wages and interest and profits to the factors of production, labor, capital, natural resources, land. Okay? Well, man, you talk to bankers today, every now and then they act as if this income distribution is unrelated to their economic activity. Unrelated. Nonsense. There is nothing more real in economics than a distribution of income. However, of course, there's nothing more real than the real income, and hence the real consumption that you and I have as a result of our participation in the economy. For when we participate in the economy, we get paid. And when we get paid, we get an income. And our income is the basis for our consumption. Well, doesn't it follow that you ought to pay attention to that circular reasoning? Very good, Lou, to swing the arm that way. But the point is that that was a banker from Salt Lake City running the Federal Reserve System before Keynes provided the theoretical foundation for that sort of policies. Okay. Mariner Eccles, in his memoir, wrote the following, and when he was talking about macroeconomic policy, he was using a good old example, as in a poker game where chips become concentrated in fewer hands. Others stay in the game only by borrowing. When their credit runs out, the game stops. Now, I mean, every one of you have watched Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid and other Westerns where, in fact, that sort of a scene goes on. I just want to tell you that our first chair of the Federal Reserve Board understood perfectly what was really involved. Okay, how do we get into this? I should stop for questions now, and I planned on it. But you see, I have an enthusiasm for this topic that goes beyond my interest in answering your questions. I'll stay a little longer, but anyway. Okay, how did we get into this mess that we're in at the present time? Well, until I read Reich, I never understood as completely as I presently do why my professors kept talking about the monetary sector and the real sector, the monetary economy and the real economy. Well, my goodness, you know, when you make that separation, you then begin to look at the books that occupied everybody's attention for a long time. Books like this one, this time it's different, analyzed financial crises over centuries. And it's a wonderful book. Man, you wouldn't be surprised at how many tables and figures there are in them. I mean, it just is wonderful. If there was something like this that I could have written, I probably would have given up years of my life to do it. I mean, it really is wonderful. But the point is that through October approximately of October of 2010, when Reich published this book, all the books that were being published dealt with the financial crisis. They didn't deal with the unemployment crisis, the balance of payments, relations with China, et cetera. All this stuff was forgotten about because it was mortgage defaults that were really of concern. Okay, so Reich comes in and he does a real economic analysis. I'm going back to the pool. Now, it turns out that Mariner Eccles would have understood our plight perfectly, because this is a figure which demonstrates that productivity, the dotted line, begins to separate from the average hourly compensation. That's wages, salaries, plus whatever else they've got, and could be health benefits and so on, that are funded for employees in the United States. Now, I can't tell you how they estimate that, but that's macroeconomics. You know, you find ways to invent index numbers that